So this is a very exciting, extra special forest call, because I think so many of the wonderful people from the ecosystem are on the call and actually going to get to share. The subject of this week's forest call is a recap of the Laddership Retreat that was held last weekend in Phoenix, where coordinators from the service-based ecosystem came together to collectively co-create our path forward to stepping it up. And the retreat was called a Laddership Retreat, which is derived from one of Jayesh Bhai's sayings. Jayesh Bhai, who runs Manav Sadhana, one of the co-founders of Manav Sadhana, which is a very closely related organization in the ecosystem. And he says that you should be a ladder, not a leader. And so what we'd like to do is just to have people go around the circle, people who are there, to share what their idea and conception is of what it means to be a ladder. And I will start while we get people to get in the queue here. You want to just press star 6 in this opening circle to get in the queue. And my concept, I think, comes from just observing Jayesh Bhai, who I think is able to see into the heart of people. And I think he sees the good, and he also sees where people could use some improvement. And he uses his presence and his love and his attention to just kind of lift the vibe of those around him and to guide people on how to take the next step on their journey. And it's really beautiful to watch. I mean, I think if you just have a one-sided view where you only see the good, then there's always a little bit of, it could be Pollyanna-ish or incomplete. But the fact that he sees both and accepts completely, you know, I think is what one of his gifts is to helping people kind of take their next step. So we'd like to hear everyone's voice, especially those who are at the retreat. We want to hear what your concept is of laddership or servant leadership, and just go ahead and press star 6 to get into the queue. And I think we would like to start with Audrey, or let's see, who would we start with?
I can jump in. Hi, Rahul. Everyone, this is Amit. And laddership to me, you know, that I've just been thinking about that definition a lot, or at least in the terms of servant leadership. And when I look at it, I see it in terms of, you know, you can be a ladder in different environments, different contexts. And when I think of it, especially within a service-based context, you know, the first word that actually comes to mind is love. And there's that whole kind of quote or idea of, you know, service or love, or even, you know, especially in a laddership context, is, you know, when you have nothing left to take and only have something to give. And that idea of just giving and giving without some kind of expectation of return or gain or recognition, and just to see someone succeed. Or and I don't mean succeed in a traditional, you know, ambition sense, but just really to help them move along in their journey. And so to me, being a ladder means to help someone in their journey just for the sake of seeing them, you know, move forward or progress.
Wonderful. I think we have Sam in the queue. And again, press star 6 to go ahead and get in the queue.
Hi, everybody. Good morning. Hola, buenos dias. Good morning. Jai Jagat. Victory to the world. Victoria al planeta. This is a sort of joint report here, as Pancho and I are crouched over by phone at the office near Casa de Paz, in the community of Canical Farm, and we are thrilled to be plugged once again in the ecosystem through the electron land, and getting nourished with your contributions and loving presence. And personally, I love the idea of laddership in the sense of especially that notion to always stay alert to ways that empowering others and really making other people or helping other people shine and grow is it's just such a beautiful way to live. So I really resonate with this idea, and it's something I look forward to exploring more
and witnessing how many small details and signs of great love have been sent in our way, so that we're witnessing how, you know, someone is letting us use that ladder, and so that we are can interchange that position back and forth. And as we say, maybe one day we're just gonna throw away that that ladder and get into that kind of danciness, so we can say in the giving and receiving, and just to dance. Well, the same happens here with the ladder.
Thank you, guys. The next caller.
Bharat, what I understand from this concept is when you say laddership, it kind of puts me in the mindset of giving, taking all the responsibility or offering somebody to get better, move forward from whatever I can offer, versus leadership. The mindset goes is that I'm a leader and I have to guide the people. I have to give the direction to the people because that's what leadership means. And mindset goes to I am doing something. I don't know, somehow it involves my ego. So I really love this concept of leadership, that it opens my feeling as I want to give and I want to do rather than I'm doing something for someone.
Thank you, Bharat.
Hi, this is Sky.
Hey, Sky.
Great to be here today. Laddership for me, I've thought about it obviously quite a bit, and particularly for me what's resonated is this concept of laddership, which is truly personified by Jayesh Bhai, which is really deconstructing the concept of hierarchy and replacing it with reciprocity. In the my opportunity to speak to Jayesh Bhai and to listen to Jayesh Bhai, it really made me think, it's kind of silly, but it made me think of a ladder. And the idea that you can take a ladder and you can turn it upside down, but it still does the exact same thing. It doesn't matter which side is up. Either way, it's meant to elevate. And so that was really, I was really affected by that with Jayesh Bhai. And for me, that what resulted was being a leader and being a ladder means two things, and that means climbing the ladder yourself and holding the ladder, and that even if you are the leader, that sometimes you may find yourself holding it so other people can ascend, but you have to separate from your ego so that when the moment is right, those other people can hold the ladder for you and you can ascend. And always allowing for that ladder to go either way, irrespective of who's holding it and who's climbing it.
Oh. Sky, you should be our guest speaker next time.
Thank you, Sky. Move on to our next caller. I don't know who this is. It's listed as anonymous.
Hi, everybody. Namaste. This is Michael. I'm here in San Leandro.
And I've had a blessing of, I had a wonderful weekend class on creative leadership with Dr. David Campbell, who's one of the founders of the Center for Creative Leadership. And one of the gifts he gave us, was actually mindfulness. He did a wonderful exercise where he set a timer and he told us that at any point in time, this will go off. And then at that moment, you're going to have to stop whatever we're doing and we'll write down our thoughts. So it was a wonderful opportunity to be mindful during the whole class. One of the other gifts that he gave us is some beautiful quotes on leadership, and I've gone through them and tried to pick out the ones that I feel embody laddership the best. So I'll give you some of these, and for me, a lot of them ring true and also speak of a lot of service space type experiences. The first one is actually reminded me a lot of the book Infinite Vision, and it's by Walter Lippmann, and he says, "The genius of a good leader is to leave behind a situation that common sense, without the grace of genius, can deal with successfully." And I think that speaks a lot to the model that was implemented, via the infinite vision. A couple other ones that I'd like to share just briefly. St. Francis of Assisi said, "It is no use walking anywhere to preach unless our walking is our preaching." And there's one that actually Dwight Eisenhower at one point had said, "It's amazing what you can accomplish if you don't care who gets the credit for it." And that's a very service-based idea. And then another one that I thought was really meaningful is Lao Tzu said, "A leader is best when people barely know he exists. When his work is done, his aim fulfilled, they will say, 'We did this themselves.'"
Mm. Wow.
You, Mike.
You're on fire with the quotes, man. Very cool. Very cool.
Hi, this is Siddharth from Boston. And just glad to connect with everyone after the retreat. I think it's been almost a week since you all parted ways, but it feels like much longer. But leadership for me, I mean, I really resonated with the concept of a journey towards becoming zero or the journey towards emptiness. And to me, that is a very, very core part of leadership. When we're working with the community, how can we look at this community and its existence without our presence? So I think just constantly maintaining that approach in our service towards others and removing ourselves from the picture, to me, that's what really, really resonates. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Siddharth. Again, if you do have a thought on laddership or servant leadership that you want to share in the circle, we definitely want to hear your voice. So press star 6 to get in the queue, and we will move on to our next caller.
Hi, this is Jeff. Boy, there were so many great things that I got out of this retreat. That helped me reinforce some of what laddership is. I wouldn't even know where to start. I know Amit mentioned, you know, something about it being around love, being a key part of it, and I definitely saw that, you know, whether it's the power of a few kind words of support or a glance or just a hug or even just silence. I think sharing all that stuff really makes a difference. You know, Sky mentioned, you can flip a ladder, and it, either way, it still works the same. I also think that it doesn't matter how tall that ladder is, even if it's just a step stool, I think every little step or two helps people to make a difference. I really, I think it was summed up for me best. One of my fellow retreaters told me that after this retreat, that, you know, boy, I would bet that people see a difference in you, especially those that really know you, once you leave here. I laughed about it. I said, yeah, you're probably right. And it was amazing. Within the first 30 minutes of being back home, it was pointed out to me two different times. And I think things like that really reinforce, how important, you know, leadership can be and just how all the little things, once you start practicing them and just implementing anything that you implement and to help be a ladder for somebody else, I think makes a difference. And, you know, boy, I'm really appreciative of all of that and certainly have an enormous amount of gratitude towards everyone who's helped me be a ring or two on my journey. And I think, you know, if I can do the same for anybody else, I'll definitely have done what I set out to do.
Thank you, Jeff. I think we have Bharath again.
Hi, this is Neelam. I'm Bharath's wife. And
hi.
We both had, we were really fortunate to meet Nipun at the UPenn graduation. So we heard him live. And so that was one thing. And I have worked in Manav Sadhana with Jayesh Bhai. So I really feel blessed and fortunate to know these wonderful people. And when I first heard the theme laddership and not leadership, the first thing came to my mind was a ladder. But then I looked at the picture that they have put with the elephant helping the snail go up. And I said, yeah, we have to, if we have the strength, we have to use it to bring up somebody or take help of people who have the, you know, power or the strength to help us. And the other thing was just the ladder. And, you know, I just want to go up the ladder the right way so that I can learn more and also, you know, help the other people to come up with me. So that's what I got from that, in short.
Thank you. I think Prakash is next.
Thank you. This is Shruti and Prakash calling from the heart of the Bay. It is such a beautiful feeling to hear everyone's voice, deeply moved by everyone sharing so far and really looking forward. Personally, leadership, what brought up is, I would like to think of to learning to live the quality, embody the essence of a tree. The ladder and the tree symbolizes continuously learning to live, you know, in the spirit of growth, continuing to every moment providing, giving some essence, either the shadow or the fruits or a safe space in the home for the birds and the honeybees. So I would like to think of, you know, to live a life inspired from the spirit of the tree when I think of leadership. Thank you.
Thank you, Prakash. Next, we will go with Audrey.
Good morning or afternoon, everybody. This is Audrey calling from Boston. And I think the idea of laddership for me, it just makes me smile because it's such a, like, unpresumptuous word. I feel like leadership makes you think so much about yourself, but when you have laddership in there, it's just such a, so it's like such a cute word in a way. And and it's also like about having the people you're around, looking at them and seeing how can I serve you rather than how can I lead you, how can I serve you, and wanting, like, kind of like a parent to a child, wanting them to go beyond you. And I think when thinking about that, when approaching people from that sort of perspective, I don't know, it just makes my heart open up so much more. So,
thanks, Audrey. We are going to go with Bella next. And I think I have to unmute you to hear you. Go ahead, Bella.
Good morning, everyone. I'm calling in from Houston this morning, and sort of connected to what Audrey was saying. I think what everyone is saying like ties in with each other and creates this. I'm envisioning like these beautiful pieces of a ladder that we're all building together from our stories and insights. And you know, there's a space. I got a lot of insight about, you know, how to be a ladder and what is a ladder. And I guess I'll start with a small story. So before the retreat, I was actually at a work conference. And interestingly enough, there was a session at the conference on leadership and how to be a better leader in the work environment. And the life coach that was leading the session began by kind of giving examples of great leaders in the world. And she said, I want to know how you guys define leadership. And, you know, she even said, unfortunately, most of us maybe haven't had the opportunity to be around great leaders, but we've had good leaders. And so everyone was going around the room, and I was sitting way in the back, and I kind of raised my hand, and she, you know, picked on me, and I started talking about, well, what I said was, I said, I don't believe in leadership, I believe in laddership. And I didn't have a mic, and so she was like, wait, can you repeat that? And then someone brought a mic, and then I said it really loud. I believe in laddership. And she like kind of tilted her head, and she was like, huh, interesting word. And so she's like, what do you mean by that? So I kind of wasn't, I explained it in like as quickly as possible, but it was hard to explain it in that kind of space. And I was kind of thrown off. So it was interesting to come to the retreat right after that session. But being in the session, I thought a lot about Bloom Bars, which is a kind of a gift economy community art space in Washington, D.C., where we have our Wednesday meditations. And, you know, Krishna and I have thought a lot about how to, like the idea of Bloom Bars is you bloom, we bloom. And it really is this beautiful volunteer-run, unsolicited donation-run space. But one of our challenges is that a lot of newcomers to the space that are unfamiliar with, you know, this idea of gift economy, it's hard to basically explain it. It's something that you have to experience. So, like, how do we explain it in a way or show it in a way that newcomers are able to, you know, understand that it's a gift economy space when they're entering through the front doors? And so I got so many things from the retreat, and one of them was environment is key to creating sort of like a laddership and sort of environment. So I guess I'm going off on a tangent, but let me bring it back to what I originally wanted to say, because in thinking about Bloom Bars, I too like start getting all the values of laddership sort of become these concepts in my mind, and how do you actually put them into practice? And so focusing on the small is something that really that resonated with me. So just bringing everything back to the small, and that connected to that is focusing on the relationships and not, you know, the results. And that brings me back into the present moment and away from the larger strategy or plan of wanting to make this project. So I guess ultimately it's, yeah, focusing on every moment-to-moment, you know, conversation, relationship that you're building with every new person, and being in that present space and just trusting in that to create ripples and whatever ripples might come from that.
Thank you. We are going to move to Nipun.
Ah, all right. I get to close it out here. So I was online, and I ended up running into a beautiful quote by James Perry, who was running for the mayor of New Orleans back in 2010. And he said that one of the greatest lessons he's learned around this theme of servant leadership was Martin Luther King. Greatest personality that embodied the values was Martin Luther King. And he described it really well. So I just want to read a couple lines that he shared. He said, a servant leader is the one who offers an inclusive vision, listens carefully to others, persuades through reason, and heals divisions while building community. It's easy to spot servant leaders in a room where others are jockeying for attention. they are the ones listening to someone others might consider unimportant. When faced with a problem, they look for solutions that benefit everyone. When something goes wrong, they take the blame. When things go well, they share the credit. They tell everyone the same story, even when it's inconvenient or difficult. They know that they don't have all the answers, so they seek advice from others. They work hard and inspire others to do the same. And to that, I mean, that's a lot, but I thought it was really well put. And one addition I would have to that is sometimes I think servant leaders have this capacity to listen to their inner voice, and they can be spontaneously wild. And I think we had a perfect example of that at the retreat in our host, who was Rob. Rob decides, you know, Rob has this, you know, giant home. I think it was 10,000 square feet. And he hosted everybody. And in the process of hosting, he decided to turn everything into a gift economy style a offering for us, you know, Karma Kitchen style. So instead of having a price, he put it at zero. And he says, all of you, I mean, this is 40 people that he's hosting, and the price tag is zero. And he did that because he was spontaneously moved by it, you know, and I think we have so many examples of people who continue to listen to that inner voice and have the guts and the audacity to actually not be attached to previous views and really go with the flow and say, oh, this seems like a higher calling. I want to pay attention. I want to pay attention to that. I think Richard is an example of somebody who did that within our own ecosystem when, you know, he's running a magazine with subscriptions and all of a sudden he runs across this idea that hits a deep chord in him, and he immediately like turns it all down, upside down. And he said he offers refunds to his traditional subscribers and says from now on only offerings of gratitude. So that capacity to not just listen to others, but also to listen to a deep voice in you, and to know the difference between, you know, the depths of those voices, is, I think, a really big hallmark of a good servant leader. So happy to be on the call, and I look forward to hearing everyone else's inputs here.
Thank you, Nipun. So we are going to turn it over now to Amit, who's going to hold the space for three of our anchors in the ecosystem who are at the retreat that will share around specific themes that came up at the retreat itself. So Amit, are you ready?
I'm ready to go.
Great.
Great. Well, again, welcome everyone to the call. Very excited to hear some of these reflections. And, you know, again, there was a group of us that had recently gathered for this leadership retreat. And, you know, it had a variety of different sort of activities and brainstorming sessions and group discussions, as well as just general sharing. And, you know, from that, there's a lot of things that emerged that were, you know, universally applicable to sort of anyone, you know, and applicable whether it's in our daily lives, in a work context, a family context, in an inner context. And so, you know, three of our ladders, as we call them, from the ecosystem are here with us today. It's Ashish, Arthi, and Birju. And we were hoping that they were going to share some of their reflections from the retreat. And so I wanted to kind of kick off the session with a question for Ashish. And Ashish, who's also been a past featured guest on the Forest Call, was actually one of the original service-based volunteers when we first began back in 1999. So from monastery hopping with Nipun to building websites and being a strong presence at Wednesdays in the Bay to now living in the East Coast over the last several years and serving in different capacities, whether it was different random acts of kindness service events or hosting one-day Wednesday-style events at his home for many of the service-based members from Boston to D.C., he's seen the organization evolve, and not only in terms of our name from Team Change from Charity Focus to Service Space, but also an evolution in terms of having just started out building websites for nonprofits and gifting that to them to a wide variety of generosity and gift economy projects that exist today. And so, you know, then this is something that we actually spoke about at the retreat, and so I would like to have Ashish start off by reflecting on this evolution and what he's seen and really kind of what stood out.
Hi, can you hear me, Amit?
Yes, we can.
All right. Hello, everybody. You know, very happy to be here. And, you know, thanks for the opportunity to share my thoughts. You guys are being the ladder, allowing me to speak and share my thoughts. So really appreciate that. Hey, so the first thing from 13 years ago, there were no Dunga-style hugs. We missed that. And, you know, of course, now we have the blessing of your hugs. But to get on your question of, you know, what has changed and, you know, it's just been amazing to kind of compare and contrast where things were 13 years ago to where things are now. You know, on one level, I feel not much has changed because it's always been about the inner transformation, even though we started with a simple tool of, you know, building websites for nonprofits. That was just a tool to facilitate inner transformation. In fact, I think we use the term, you know, being incubator of compassionate action. I don't think that has changed. In fact, now there are several tools to facilitate that inner transformation, whether it's smart cards or Karma Kitchen or, you know, the various activities we have. You know, the focus is still on, you know, transforming ourselves. So on that level, I don't think anything has changed, which is beautiful. What I have seen, you know, has changed is there's definitely more depth and there's definitely more scale. In terms of depth, I see more fully committedness, right, more authenticity in the people who are the volunteers, right? Earlier, I think when we started in 99 or 98, there's always this notion of doing our jobs during the day and then switching gears into the service mindset. And, you know, when I was at this retreat last week, I could tell that people are fully committed. You know, their lives, every moment, every day, every thought is geared around, and how can I be of service? And, you know, it reflects also in the activities, right? So even, let's say, Daily Good started out by Nippon with a simple email, which is like a 2 or 3 line quote. And now if you look at Daily Good and the depth it has, right, it's a very rich, you know, action-oriented, web-based, you know, forum. So very interactive, people can respond back. So you could see the depth in that as well. So there's definitely a lot of richness and depth, which is beautiful. And generally, when someone goes deep, it's, you know, difficult to scale. But I also noticed over the years, and especially the retreat, the scale, right? So earlier, 13 years ago, there was just a few core group of people. And now you could see we had to keep the number of people at the retreat to 40 because there's a lot more people than 40 who was part of the core group of people that deeply share those values, right? So these are the two things that really stood out, right, in terms of how things have been different from 13 years ago. It's the depth and the scale. And generally, both these two things to go together are really hard. And the fact that they're both going together just speaks volume to the authenticity of the people involved, right? So yeah, that's pretty much what I had to share, Amit.
Yeah, well, so I guess, you know, so given that service space has sort of changed this external manifestation from, you know, the very concrete idea of just building websites to some of the more subtle generosity projects or just even around the theme of generosity, how does that impact your thinking about the value it creates?
So in terms of value it creates for the individual or value it creates for the society around us?
For both, you know, and specifically, you know, what value has it created within you, so as a more of a personal reflection, and then more generally at the broader level?
I mean, for me personally, right, it definitely has influenced how I'm thinking about what direction I need to take in my life, right? So even, for example, you know, quitting my job and going to school to find, back to business school to find a path, you know, in which I could align my values to a career path and trying to let's say, get into healthcare, for example, and in a space where I can be of service, was directly as a result of being involved, you know, with service space, right? Another example of just being at the retreat and seeing Jayesh Bhai, in Gujarati, there's a term called doing, you know, valo karvana, which is basically, you know, caressing the other person's head in a very loving way. And I was observing Jayesh Bhai that he would go around and just, you know, if he's not massaging someone's head, he's, you know, caressing somebody in a very brotherly, fatherly love. And I noticed that it hit me so hard. When I came back home, I started doing that to my kids every day. I would just sit and caress them. And the instant response they had is to hug me. And I always had the benefit of that from my parents, but somehow I had lost that connection to that simple act till I saw Jayesh Bhai. So, you know, these acts of generosity and seeing them manifest in simple, small ways, you know, impacts me in my personal decisions, right? So whether it's my career choice or whether it's how I interact with my immediate family or, you know, what kind of values I want my kids to have, it definitely has a ripple effect, right? So we talked about laddership, right? One of the things I really like about that term ladder is, you know, the image I had in my mind, I read this somewhere, is there's this person climbing the ladder, and the person reaches the top of the ladder, and they realize they're on the wrong wall, right? So then they obviously have to come back down the ladder and replace the ladder on another wall. Now, the concept of laddership really resonates with me because you have the opportunity to place the ladder on the right wall, and it gives you that opportunity to take a step back and think, is this the right space that I want to grow in or want others to grow in, right? So, you know, being of service and being involved with service space and charity focus has given me that flashlight to focus that ladder on the right wall, whether it's just for me personally, other people around me. And I think in that, you know, expanding that circle a bit to the community, I think this has manifested in us being given the opportunity to hold a space every quarter where like-minded people can come and spend a day and have a retreat and go deeper within, right? So I think it's definitely manifested in different ways, and it's difficult to quantify these things in terms of value, but I definitely feel that it's, you know, getting us all deeper in our journeys or further along.
Hmm. So, you know, one of the things that you had said in your reflection was, you know, service space and being a place where it can incubate some of these values, and especially around the ideas of generosity and compassion. And, you know, one of the things that we did during the retreat was we reflected on this idea of generosity. You did, along with a few others. And so I was hoping you could share some of those reflections, and specifically, you know, where were those seeds of generosity planted, you know, with you when you were growing up, and then how do you intend to continue to plant those seeds with your own children?
Well, I mean, you know, it's very interesting when that question was asked, and I was thinking back on where those seeds were planted, and I, you know, when I think back, I don't think it was ever consciously planted. It was just the person around me was being the change, right? And specifically my parents, right? There was, and I've said this a number of times, that they were just a constant presence of, you know, loving kindness. It was always there. And I don't think they had an intent that I'm going to be kind or be loving so that, you know, Ashish can be generous. They just were that way. And I know that helped me kind of connect to the world in a different way. I think it helps you trust other people in a deeper way. It helps you deal with situations in a different way. And I think that has put a responsibility on me as a parent to be that loving, you know, kind presence to my children so that they can relate to the world around that, around them in a different way, right, in a more positive way. And so it manifests itself in, you know, small activities that we do together, right? And we've covered this in a in a previous call that we had with, I think, the Cubs, where, you know, we would, you know, do a video of the week every Wednesday. We would show them one of the Karma Tip videos, or we have our kids go on Kiva.org and pick out social entrepreneurs to which they, you know, we, you know, donate a certain amount so that they can see how that money is actually being used to help others, to serve others. And, you know, oftentimes we'll try to do a small random act of kindness where, you know, recently my wife tagged my daughter's violin teacher with a flower bouquet, and we taped her on video just for the kicks of it. So to answer your question, I think, you know, planting the seeds with the intent of the other person being generous, I think it's less of being a conscious effort, but more about me as a parent just being the change and being, you know, showing loving, kind presence, just like Jayesh Bhai did, and letting the rest kind of manifest and take care of itself, right? And I have a lot of deep faith in that. If I and my wife are caring, loving parents with a certain guidance to the kids, I think the right things will happen.
Mm. That's beautiful. Thank you, Ashish. I wanted to actually shift gears a little bit and kind of change focus over to one of our other ladders, Aarti. Aarti was actually one of the first set of featured speakers on the Force call when we first started, where she shared her journey of a bike ride from Boston to Boulder, Colorado, and where she did acts of kindness along the way. And that's an incredible story in and of itself. She's a ladder within our Help Others team and is the host of Wednesdays on Sundays out in Boston. And, you know, one of the things that we did during the retreat was each of the various sort of core projects within Service Space kind of just gave an update on kind of where things are, whether it's Help Others, whether it was Daily Good, Conversations, Karma Tube, and sort of an overview of, you know, how things operate, as well as kind of how engagement has changed over time. And we also had a presentation on social media and kind of how we're engaging with the community at large. And from this, there were a lot of sort of reflections and eventually a breakout session where we talked about, you know, in which direction do we want to go, you know, moving forward. So, you know, is there value in focusing our energy on, say, cultivating relationships on Facebook or Twitter, or does it make sense to do more things sort of on an offline level and just keep going strong with things like Karma Kitchen or random acts of kindness events? And so, you know, from that, we ended up breaking out into three different groups. We had a group that was focused on how on technology and which direction should we go. We had a group that talked about the importance of being offline. So how do we move from the online world to the offline world? How do we get individuals to, you know, think globally but then act locally? And our third session was around kind of the business and corporate world, you know. So oftentimes, you know, we have our day jobs and many of us sort of worked within that context. And, you know, so how is, you know, does the work that we do, does that align with some of our deeper inner values? And when we come across some of those challenges, how do we address that? How do we negotiate within ourselves those challenges? And so I was hoping that Aarti could share some of her reflections, both from the group that she participated in, as well as some of the some of the reflections that came out of the other groups.
Hello, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Hi, it's so wonderful to hear everybody's voices. I feel like I'm getting those retreat vibes, so it feels good. So as Amit said, we broke out into three different groups, and it was really wonderful opportunity to talk about sort of different main topics that came up during the presentations of all the different portals. I guess I'll start with the technology and laddership, because that was the the topic that scared me the most, I guess, in some respects. You know, Neil had shared a very, very interesting quote by the person that is the founder of LinkedIn.
Reid Hoffman.
Thank you. Reid Hoffman, there we go. Stating that in order for a social network to be successful, it needs to play on one of the seven deadly sins. And so Facebook sort of fed into ego, and LinkedIn was greed, and Zynga was sloth. So, you know, that was interesting. And now with service-based, you know, what are we, and what is the role? How do we skillfully use technology in a way that's inspiring and really, I think, fundamentally kind of going towards inner transformation rather than playing into one of these seven deadly sins? So that was an interesting topic brought up. And I think there was a lot of back and forth on how we best use service-based. And I know that now we're really ramping up social media and service-based. And I think all of the portals are sending out Twitter messages and updates on Facebook. And we just want to be careful that ultimately, you know, we are working from a space of inner alignment, and then our values are truly shining through the use of these different online tools. But I think that we kind of came to the conclusion and had some interesting thoughts from Jayesh Bhai and Reverend Hangshur as well, with the idea of really skillful use and skillful means, sort of the need for us to look at technology, and as long as we are all internally aligned, then, you know, it's cool. We want to be able to use technology to leverage the beautifully inspiring stories that we hear to get it out there so people can read them and be inspired and keep growing. I know personally, just with my experience with Help Others, it's just been amazing seeing the groups, the Help Others groups, kind of form online through online friends. I mean, we met Jeff online, and that was all through the internet. That was all through technology. And from there, so many ripples were created. So I think every individual person sort of in the service space and in the broader space, I think if there is an intention to use technology wisely, it's cool. That was my come away with that. I know that I was thinking, I mean, when after the presentation, I remember thinking, I'm going to deactivate from Facebook. Like, this is ridiculous. And then Reverend Hangshur comes and does this beautiful presentation, and then Reverend Hangshur is on Facebook. So I'm thinking, well, Reverend Hangshur is on Facebook. It's cool if I'm on Facebook. But then again, the other side of me is saying, well, you know, it doesn't matter if a monk is on Facebook. What matters is how you internally are using the technology. And I think that as a group, service-based, I think everybody is on board with our organizing principles and values, and we'll move with the use of technology in a really responsible and aligned way. So those were my thoughts on the technology. And please, anybody else, jump in if I missed something.
No, I think that was a great recap there, Arthi. And so if you want to share quickly maybe on one of the other two sessions, that'd be great as well.
Okay, great. So I'll share quickly on the business corporate section. So that was really came out of a question I think Rahul brought up, which was, you know, feeling internally misaligned with having these wonderful service-based values and feeling so inspired in this space, and then going back to our lives, our daily work lives, and maybe that space not feeling as aligned. And so there's basically a tension between the work environment and the values that we want to cultivate and bring to that workspace. And somebody had mentioned that, you know, 28% of Americans felt engaged at work. So that's kind of a low percentage. So we had a really wonderful discussion on how do we align ourselves deeper within the work environment. And there was a couple of takeaways. One, I was really inspired by Birju's story of, you know, in his, and Birju is in a lot of sort of important high-powered New York meetings, you know, and in this space, he still, he takes a moment of silence before eating. And I was really moved by that. That's a very deep and sort of unwavering commitment to his values. And I think it's, and even though it might be a little awkward, Birju kind of walks forth with that value and just does it anyways, because that's what he believes in, and that's, you know, that's what he's following. So that was sort of one of the takeaways I had, was, you know, creating, sort of bringing these service-based values to work starts first by defining your own organizing principles. What are they? And then sort of having a deep commitment to those principles and values. The other thing was, you know, Jayesh Bhai had mentioned that we need to have a patience, and he mentioned something about, you know, I think Gandhi saying things can take up to 5,000 years. Like, that's the kind of patience we need to be having. So within and bringing that thought of patience into the work environment, it's really, you know, it's patience with yourself for trying and keep working at it, but also patience with the process and patience with that commitment, knowing that if you provide value to others, then everything else will organically grow. And there's patience and there's faith, which are two sides of a coin that really kind of go along. So that was the other point I dropped from that, I'd taken from that. And sort of the third was sort of to drop your expectations and really the importance of cultivating the soil of trust and values and relationships as the three main sort of goals here, and then allowing other things to grow organically. And I just wanted to add just one more quick thing that was really beautiful story shared by Jayesh Bhai, which I've been thinking about all week. And this was a story about Gandhi being in a very important meeting, I think, with the Prime Minister and the President and a lot of very influential people in the freedom movement. And he said that in the middle, they're meeting at the Gandhi Ashram, and in the middle of a meeting, a boy comes into the room and tells Gandhi that his goat has hurt his foot. And so, you know, after a minute, Gandhi leaves the meeting and goes and tends to the goat and the goat's foot, and then comes back to the meeting. And everybody at the meeting had thought, you know, Gandhi had gone senile, like he couldn't cut anymore, he didn't have it in him anymore. And really now, years and years later, you know, nobody remembers what went on at that meeting, nor does anybody really care. But what moves people is the fact that Gandhi left to take care of a goat's foot. So, you know, that's kind of like, that's where all of this kind of comes into that, to that real deep commitment to values, which was probably the biggest takeaway I had on the whole from the retreat. And I think one that underlined all of the sessions that we broke out into.
Thank you, Artina. Yeah, actually, I was hoping to kind of jump in there as well, because Rahul was actually a participant as well in that, as you had mentioned, and he actually recently put together sort of a small recap of that. And so I was hoping, Rahul, that you could maybe share maybe some of those brief points in regard to what your takeaway was as well from that breakout session, just because, you know, many of us, like I said, are work within that business world or corporate world, and, you know, again, aligning that inner values within our external context is always helpful.
Sure. So the biggest takeaway on an internal level was just feeling like values, again, had a context, and there was a role for inner transformation when we didn't have the opportunity to be spending most of our time thinking about values outside of the work context. So there was a nice blog post that we put up, and it's a distillation of the principles that I took away, and I'll just go through them briefly to maybe inspire folks to read through. But the first was that perfection is a paradox. So we're often trying to look for an environment that we think is going to be perfect, but it's actually just perfect for you in that it will catalyze whatever needs to happen on the next step of your journey. And that's an important principle. The next is also to just protect your values. So creating a boundary that protects them from the creep of work taking over and conveying that, and also being prepared to sacrifice for it. Another key principle was just to build high-quality relationships at work, because it will not only improve your happiness with the environment, but it'll radically change your productivity and allow you to deepen with people in ways that'll create synergies at work and outside of work. Another principle was to connect to your transcendent purpose and to cultivate mastery. So this was distilled from some insight and research that showed that these were key elements to satisfaction at work. And there was a wonderful story that Jayesh Bhai had shared about, you know, chipping, you know, men chipping rock in a quarry, and one of the men was asked what he's doing, and he says, I'm chipping rock. Another person is asked the same question, and he says, I'm building a cathedral. And so if you can find the cathedral in your work, that's what gives you the inspiration to cultivate that mastery. And then the last is just to cultivate awareness and equanimity. The idea being that with all of the different unknowns and blind spots, finding the right skill or the right answer will be challenging. And so the master virtue is really awareness and equanimity, which will get you through any sort of storm. So I'd encourage folks to check out that blog post. It is up on the service-based blog, and it's a nice little read.
Great.
What's the name of the post, Rahul?
It's called Five Principles for Inner Transformation at Work.
Yeah, we will send that link out to all the callers after the call. We have one more letter that we're gonna kind of have reflect in a moment, but I'm gonna turn on the Q&A. This way, people that have questions, and these questions can be pointed to any of our speakers today, or just sort of in general, if you want to pose it for the group, we're happy to have someone sort of volunteer to take on the question. But I wanted to turn things over to our last panelist, who is Birju, and surprise, surprise, he was actually also a former guest on the call in the past, and on one level, I feel like he needs no real introduction. He's been a service-based veteran for a number of years. He's seen some of this evolution occur as well. And, you know, one of the things that really stands out is how much he takes his work within service-based and how much it seems to just seep into and blend into everything that he does, whether it's within his work context, whether it's as simple as him walking down the street and the way he looks at individuals. And so, you know, one of the key things that are elements of our retreat is we had two individuals that really did serve as examples of ladders. One of them, which you've been hearing about, is Jayesh Bhai, and then the other individual that's been making an impact is Reverend Heng Shur. And so I was hoping that Birju could sort of start with maybe providing us with a sort of his summary of his sort of key takeaways, you know, what's been resonating in his heart from what Reverend Heng Shur had to say as well as what Jayesh Bhai had to say.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much, brother. You can hear me, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So, yes, as Amit mentioned, we were absolutely blessed with two individuals who had spent decades not just investing in results, but primarily investing in process. And having the opportunity to hear both of them share for an extended period was definitely a blessing from my standpoint. Just a bit of background on Reverend Heng Shur. One of the oldest monks in his order has spent many decades cultivating the inner process of laddership and trying to incorporate that or seeing how that gets incorporated into the path of the bodhisattva, as he puts it, which is the way that I would process that is the Buddhist ladder, for lack of a better term. So the evening that he shared actually began with a beautiful sacred ceremony that we were all involved with. Everybody that was there entered into the room that he was going to be speaking in via a sacred bowing process where we all took three steps and bowed to the ground as an homage to an inner process that Reverend Hankshire himself went through almost 40 years ago, and the purpose of which was to try to ground ourselves and become more connected to not just the earth, but recognize the deep interconnection between all beings. And that was the background from which Reverend Hankshire spoke, which is to try to get across that idea of deep interconnection. One of the key points that he was sharing was how the archetypes of unconditional giving are tending to be universal. He was speaking from a Buddhist point of view, and yet he was showing us a slideshow of art from literally around the world, from traditions that spanned every type of belief system, and showed again and again this unconditional giving symbol represented across all different types of thinking. So it's just a nice way of getting across the universality of what it is that he was sharing. The biggest takeaway for me from what he was saying wasn't even what he said. It was recognizing that most communication is nonverbal. And when you looked into his eyes, he knew who I was, and he hadn't seen me in 18 months. And he didn't really spend that much time with me in the past either. And when anybody asked him a question, he would respond to that person by name. And again, I was thinking, geez, I can't imagine he spends a lot of time with any of us. It's really amazing. And I think that's really the beginnings of what he's trying to get across, is that at every moment, how present can you be to get across your love for the other person? One story that stuck out to me that he shared was just driving home how long the journey is, and even he at his stage had a recent moment of anger, and witnessing how that reverberated in his mind and in his heart, he also shared how that anger was something that was there with him 40 years back, and how when he was on his initial pilgrimage of bowing, which we to a very small extent reenacted during the retreat, he was in a situation where some teenage kids were being a little bit rowdy with him, and he found himself reciting some prayers with an intention of non-wholesomeness. And he was reflecting on that, saying, geez, the intention matters so much, and it's so easy to get off of that razor-thin line. And even if we're doing the right thing, I mean, he's out there bowing, for gosh sakes. He's saying the right thing. He's speaking the verses of compassion. And yet his intention was, geez, I really hope somebody strikes this kid down. and that was just a huge takeaway for me, that the level of subtle intention that we must bring as part of our own process of becoming ladders is so key. So that was
sorry to just jump in there like that, but I was hoping that you could maybe reflect a little bit on how you've started to incorporate some of these values, some of these sort of takeaways from Reverend Hankshire. And while we have the other callers on the queue, or I'd like to ask anyone that has a question, go ahead and push *6, and that way you can join the queue, and that way we can sort of open things up to questions from any of the callers that are on the line.
Certainly.
But again, back to you, Virgil, if you could share a little bit about how you've already started to incorporate some of this in your day-to-day life.
Well, I'll just give one quick example on that happened this week that I think shows this idea that what a ladder is about is just trying to cultivate soil and then letting go with what happens afterwards. So part of my process has been to try to step forward as much as I possibly can to cultivate, to do all of the practices that I think we all do in the context that I happen to be in. And I showed up at work this week, and I was telling my boss about the retreat that we just had and, some of my inner takeaways and what I'd like to do personally to try to step it up. And spontaneously, he looks at me and says, I don't think that we should do loans anymore. Now, I work at an investment office, and he tells me we shouldn't do loans. We should have different ways of trying to use money to help people. And I was taken deeply aback. Why? I asked him, and he said, because debt is slavery, and I don't want to be somebody that lends out money to create that way of thinking anymore. And I was just moved that, that such thinking could come up. And it's not anything that I've played a role in at the manifestation level, but I think it's something that every single one of us on this call played a role in terms of setting the stage in the soil.
Mm.
If I can share for maybe a quick minute on Jayashvai?
Sure.
Wonderful. Just to share on the other gentleman that is deeply invested in process, and I know that both Arthi and Ashishvai shared a bit more about him as well, so I don't think too much is necessary. But as a bit of background, he does run an organization, or perhaps it's more appropriate to say an organization has emerged around his intention to serve a very large slum community in India. And one of the major points that stuck me about what he was saying is he pointed out a piece of cloth on the side of the room, and he said, we have to become like that. We have to become like rags. We have to think of our lives as things to be used for the benefit of others and to even be thrown away. There is no credit that we must seek. We are all on a process of becoming zero. And it really stuck with me that somebody who, in my mind, is clearly not zero, has an intention of going towards zero in his life, totally reframing what it is that I should be thinking about in my own.
Hmm. Yeah, it's interesting how you, in the process of becoming a zero, you are actually a hero to many of us. And so I wish that, well, we actually do have someone that's on the queue. And again, for those of you that have questions for any of our panelists, whether it's Birju, Ashish, or Arthi, please push *6, and then you can ask a question. And I think we have Mithil. Hello? 408-446-3982.
Yeah, this is Bhupen. I'm listening to all of the good stories from the retreat. You know, it reminds me, many of you probably have played this game. It's called Snakes and Ladders. And in that game, ladder only ascends. And if you hit the snake on your way up, you came down all the way where you started. So I think there's a lesson in that game. And leadership is be careful of not catching any snakes as you're going up.
Thank you. Thank you, Bunanko. Nipun, I believe you had a question.
Yeah, I did. So we have, one of the things, having had the privilege of knowing Ashish, Arthi, and Birju, reflecting on the kinds of backgrounds they come from, you know, Ashish went to Wharton, Arthi went to Harvard, as we say, and Birju, actually, while we were in Phoenix, Birju's dad was showing me the valedictorian speech, and we were talking about his success in the education world, and none of that education process grooms you to be a ladder. You know, if anything, it grooms you to be a leader, to say you've been privileged, you've been given all this, and so now you have to be, you know, at the top and show the light. And so I wanted to ask, it's a question really for all three of them, but maybe I could, focus it and point it to Arthi. And Arthi, you, at Harvard, you were with Marshall Gans, who is one of the leading sort of thought leaders in the space of organizing. He was with Cesar Chavez and the United Farm Workers Movement. Obama is constantly tapping him to learn about how to structure movements. And, you know, how do you contrast some of your learnings around leadership that you've been taught with this idea of laddership and, you know, with things like humility, how do you go to Harvard and still, like, come out saying, I actually want to be humble, I want to listen, I want to be okay being at the bottom of the pyramid, I'm okay being at the top of the pyramid, or I'm okay throwing the pyramid away altogether, you know. How have you processed that yourself?
Well, you know, to be honest, I think when I graduated from Harvard, I did the bike trip, and I just felt such a deep disconnect with that feeling with a feeling that I can't really put words to, but it's kind of the feeling that you get at the Third Space Retreat, or the feeling that you'd get when you're in a space where my values are sort of aligned in a deeper way. You know, it's interesting you bring up Marshall Ganz. I felt like his class was kind of pretty seminal for me. I mean, it was the most important thing I think I did at school, was learn his organizing techniques and sort of learn about Cesar Chavez. And it's funny because when I told him about the bike trip, he just kind of scoffed at me because, you know, Ganz doesn't believe in service. He believes in organizing. And that was the biggest disconnect between, I didn't feel, I think in that class, of course I felt inspired and I was amazed by the work that he did with Cesar Chavez. But for a man who works so closely with Cesar Chavez, I think that he missed the point, which is so valuable, of internal transformation. And I actually, you know, Ganz and I had been talking, and he had wanted me to come help with his class this year. And then we had a conversation, and I said, you know, I think you need to revisit your thoughts on Gandhi and sort of understand the importance that inner transformation played in the movement. And he looked at me, and we kind of got into a little bit of a heated discussion about it, and then it was done and left, and then he sort of took back his offer for me to help him in this class. So, you know, I think that working, I mean, and that was pretty important for me to learn. It's just that you can have all the organizing in the world, but organizing doesn't lead to inner transformation by any means. And what I left with was a pretty sort of this, I didn't leave with that feeling. I don't know how else to put it. I was kind of in this space where people were brilliant and doing wonderful things and talking and organizing wonderfully and had worked successfully the Obama campaign, and Ganz, listening to Ganz, everybody kind of, it's got that like Nipun effect on you when you listen to him. You just, yes, what can I do for you? Let me know, you know, type of deal. I think when I kind of scratched beneath the surface a bit, I realized that there's a very deep misalignment. So then I, you know, so I left with that feeling, really. So it wasn't on a happy note, but I think that it was an interesting experience just to show me where my values were aligned and where I wasn't willing to compromise. Does that answer your question? I kind of went on a tangent.
Yeah, no. It does, and I guess it's an important thing to reflect on. You seem to have found the misalignment, but one of the things I'm still curious about is how you think your colleagues who are maybe not as steeped into these values of inner transformation as you are, you know, they have almost no exposure to any of this. And so I guess they just have to wait it out and you know, maybe later on in life explore some of these things. I mean, that's just something to worry about. I don't know if we have a solution to that, but.
Yeah. You know, the person that, the misalignment I felt in Ganz's class and learning from him was one of the seeds that really started me thinking about more seriously about the bike trip, you know. So, and I, one of my colleagues from school, who is also from the sense of education, as you were talking about, and from the traditional sense that they're a superstar, who joined me on the trip, you know, I was trying to live a more, I was trying to be doing these random acts of kindness and really working on the small, like, really trying to live from that space. And, you know, she wasn't really trying to live from that space. And it was just an interesting misalignment between the two of us. And I remember starting off thinking, oh, you know, I gotta show her what I'm thinking. And I gotta sort of force these values almost on her. And then I realized, no matter how much you can only live what you believe. And that's it. And so there, I kind of dropped the need for there to be a shift in values, and I think that's what you're saying. I mean, maybe that's kind of, that's her path, and that's okay, you know, it's cool. But I think that was a big learning too, was I couldn't walk around thinking that my values are the best values or whatever, or, you know, Gans thinks organizing is great and service isn't where the way to go, then that's his thought, and I just gotta give respect to Gans and then keep walking my own path. So
thank you. Well, we give our respect to you, Arati. Thank you.
I think we have a question from Rahul next.
Yes, this question is actually for Ashish. So Ashish, I know that you're one of the people in the ecosystem who hold a lot of the group closer to Les K, and you yourself got quite close with Les. And Les is, of course, the abbot of a Zen monastery called Kanendo under Ryu Suzuki, and also an author of this book called Zen at Work. And on the tail end of, I think, 25 years that he spent at IBM, and yet still maintained his kind of deep practice of inner transformation. So Ashish, I kind of wanted to ask you to go a little deeper in reflecting on how you hold on to values in the workplace. And I know you're going through a transition yourself in moving from one workplace to finding a new workplace right now. And so just sort of what the principles you're holding to as you look for the next fit for yourself, and how you'll sort of step up or that alignment, or if that's something that you're looking to sort of refine as well.
Hey, Rahul, thanks for your question. Obviously, I've been grappling with that question for the last few months. But it's funny that you ask. You know, I've had the opportunity to try to practice, you know, values at work, and it's really interesting to note that, you know, if you're surrounded by people who resonate with those values, there's, you know, there is a better, I think, chance of that to grow. I mean, when I hear of Birju, you know, reflecting on the retreat and, you know, sharing his experiences and how that then manifests into some, you know, tangible, beautiful actions, right? Like the loan being now given in a different way. At my place of work, it's very interesting. I mean, it's a very low margin business, which is basically the company doesn't make a lot of money at the end of the day. So that tends to take the first priority over, you know, the core values at times, I feel. And so that reflects into a lot of the actions that the company takes, right? So whether it's a matter of, you know, laying a whole bunch of people off, even if, you know, the folks are, you know, aligned with the values. In my perception was, you know, kindness can be perceived as weakness in the work contest, at least where I was. Where I am, but I have had the opportunity and the privilege of, you know, practicing some of the values. And for example, when I was let go, I was, you know, typically they give a couple of weeks notice, but you know, my manager invited me to a meeting, and there was some miscommunication because and he followed up that invite saying that, Ashish, you know, if you don't want to attend, you don't have to attend. And I misunderstood that as maybe he doesn't want me to be in that meeting because, you know, I'm not going to be around. Maybe there's some confidential stuff. But he was thinking that, you know, maybe Ashish is not interested. And I kind of, you know, didn't attend that meeting. But later I connected with him and I expressed that, look, you know, I really want to give 100%, and I shared with him Martin Luther King's quote, which says, you know, even if I know the world is going to go to pieces tomorrow, I'll still plant my apple tree, apple seed, so that, you know, the whole point of that quote is in the future, the tree will grow and someone else would benefit from the fruits. And he was really blown away by that, right? So I think what happened with that is instead of giving me their standard 2 weeks, they gave me 3 months to go look for something else, right? So, you know, instead of, you know, terminating my job immediately, I have actually till end of July. And interestingly, something did work out in that time, and I did end up finding consulting work at a nonprofit in New York, which is, you know, kind of aligned with a lot of the values that, you know, I've been trying to cultivate But to be very candid, Rahul, there's always, you know, the survival aspect of it and trying to meet the needs and paying off the debts, which is in constant friction with trying to find meaningful work that helps you pay off the debt. So that's going to be interesting in how it plays out. I've, in some sense, surrendered that to the universe, and I'll be exciting to see how it manifests itself, and I'll definitely keep you posted. But, you know, I do sincerely hope that I can, you know, be the chipper, as Birju said in the quote, and even if it's, you know, some work which is not aligned to my values on a superficial level, at least I can, you know, internally use that in a meaningful way, like Aarti said, right, you know, how we use Facebook and internalize it is more important than, you know, being on Facebook or not, right? So the struggle continues, and one of the things I learned from the retreat which really stuck with me was, you know, as Birju says, you know, why is this journey so hard, and why is this journey so long? And somebody beautifully said is that that's because it goes through you. It has to go through you. So it continues. Hopefully I answered your question, Rahul.
Yes, and I hope you'll keep us posted as this each step becomes clearer so that we can continue to use you as our ladder.
I'm just going to have to jump in real quick here. We wanted to give all the three presenters an opportunity to share concluding remarks before we close. If that goes in the flow, Amit, is that a good way to close the session out?
I think that would be a fantastic way to close it out. So I was going to ask Ashish, Aarti, and Birju to just share in maybe a few sentences kind of your takeaway that sort of universally applies in terms of, you know, how you are going to be a ladder in your life and how others can be as well.
So, Amit, this is Ashish. I don't have much to share. I just want to give you guys a giant Amit Dunga hug and just say that I love you all, and I hope to continue loving you all and, you know, imbibing those values in my life every moment. You guys are a big inspiration, so thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, Ashish. Aarti?
I'm happy to go.
Yep. All right, I guess I will roll over to Birju.
Ashish, but I took my thunder, so I'll switch over. There's a comment that Ashish Pai said, which was that it's more important to come from the heart than from the mind, and I know that that's something I need to be working on. So I will be keeping that in mind and heart.
Sorry, I started talking, but I realized I was muted. Can everyone hear me now?
Yeah.
Oh, you can. Okay, good. I just feel really, really inspired, inspired to just work harder and be better, be a better person, grow in love and compassion and stillness. I feel such a deep energy to really put my nose to the grindstone and really get better at aligning deeper in those values. And I have all of you to thank for that. So I really appreciate it, and I love you all. And
thank you.
I'm looking forward for next year.
That's great. Well, again, I wanted to thank the three of you for sharing and your reflections on the Ladership Retreat. And I really wanted to thank all of our callers and participants that joined us today. And it's really special to me. Again, it lends to this idea of laddership. You know, you don't necessarily have to be the individual with the mic or the person on the floor. You can lead in silence as well. And so your presence here is absolutely important. And so I'd like to go ahead and close out the call with a minute of gratitude. And then after that, I'm going to take everyone off of mute. And I was hoping we could just sort of say kind of a big collective thank you to our three ladders, as well as to each of us for who serve as an inspiration. At times, you know, we're the ladder for someone else, and at times they are for us. So a giant thank you ladder. So a minute of gratitude, please. Thank you. I'm going to take it off of mute on the count of three, and if we could just do a thank you letters, that'd be fantastic. So one, two, hold on, and three.
Thank you, ladder.
Thank you, ladder.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I thought we were going to do very good, yay.
Yeah. Yeah, ladder, yay.
Very good, ladder. Very good. Yay. Yay.
Thank you all. Thank you.
Thanks,
again,
everyone.
We will see you guys hopefully on the call next week with our guest, Simon Cohen. Have a great week.
Thank you.
Have
guys.
A good day.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, all.